Hey guys, welcome to Motherhood in Hollywood. This episode is sponsored by BumbieBox. BumbieBox is a better way to play. Now, people always ask me, what is BumbieBox? Well, it's a toy subscription service. That means each month you get a box of toys delivered right to your door that have been specially curated just for your child's interest and age level. Whatever your kids are into, they're going to love what's inside BumbieBox. But this is a different type of toy service, and I'll tell you why. Because each toy is sustainable and eco-friendly. It has no harmful chemicals or plastics, which if you're a parent like me and is worried about that kind of thing, this is a great option for you. Definitely go to BumbieBox.com and check it out. Make sure you enter the code MIHOOD at checkout and you'll get 10% off. What a deal. BumbieBox.com is a better way to play. And I'm so happy to announce that Motherhood in Hollywood is also sponsored by Up4 Probiotics. Up4 has been manufacturing probiotic supplements and only probiotic supplements since 1979. That's a long time, you guys, so clearly they know what they're doing. Up4 features products for everybody in your family, from infants to seniors, and they come in a chewables, powder, and capsule. So you can take your probiotics however you like. And the best part is they're available at Target. That's right. Go right into your Target store in the vitamin section and take a look around. Look for Up4. We use the kids cubes that you can find in the kids vitamin section, and they worked wonders on Channing's digestive issues. So definitely check out the kids cubes, and there's other products available in the probiotics, immunity support, and the essentials section. Super easy, right there in your local Target. But if you don't have time to go to your local Target, you can also go to up4probiotics.com and order them online. Up4 Probiotics, creating a happier inside since 1979.
Come on, Mama.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 50 of Motherhood in Hollywood. I'm Heather Brooker. Hi, how are you? So glad you're here. It's been a crazy week in like the best way possible. I always say crazy, but it's not like, oh my God, I can't stand my life. I want to die. It's not quite that dramatic. It's just been long week because Channing has been on her summer break, and it's been 12, 13 hour days straight with a 3-year-old who is now refusing to nap. We're definitely dropping the nap. And it's funny. Some moms will go, oh my God, you haven't dropped the nap yet. Well, no, because mama needs that break during the day. I don't know how old your kids are. I mean, if you are at the point where you're dropping naps yet, but I think we're at that point. So it just has been making for really long days, and I'm finding it really hard to get anything done, to focus. I've had a couple of like intermittent auditions, and it's just been a lot, you know, but then I say in the best way possible, because of course there's nothing else in the world I'd rather be doing than, you know, being a stay-at-home actor mom. So love it. Complaining, but not really complaining. You feel me? So on the show today, this is really cool. So this is a very actor-centric episode, in that especially for my parent actors out there, and anybody who's thinking about taking classes. My friend Tony Rago from the Scott Sedita Acting Studio is coming on the show today. He teaches the character sitcom classes at Scott Sedita Studios and also co-teaches the one-day comedy intensive and the teen comedy classes there. So here's the deal. I used to do improv and sketch comedy with Tony a million years ago, and now he's teaching what comedy is all about for Scott Sedita, a very prominent acting school here. If you don't know about it, go check it out. I'd like to assume that I taught Tony everything he knows about comedy. And I'm only saying that because he's not here right now. If he was, he would just be like, get over yourself. But anyway, we talk a lot about his transition from doing sketch comedy 4 or 5 nights a week, and now he's teaching comedy and sitcoms type of comedy, which is a specific kind of comedy for those of you who take classes and know the difference. It's a specific kind of comedy as opposed to sketch and improv and all that. So we talk about that a little bit. He's also a new dad. He has a 6-month-old named Riley, and he talks about how he and his wife, who's also an actress, how they're juggling their careers in Hollywood and trying to figure everything out as they go along. Like, honestly, a lot of us are. I'm still figuring it out. I'm very frustrated lately with, you know, I'm in that rut that I know a lot of actors feel where you haven't booked anything in a while. You're starting to feel like you're going to get the call any minute from your agent and manager and tell you you're out. It's a weird feeling. It's a very weird, stressful feeling. So I don't know. It'll happen. It is what it is, right? We're here for the long haul, the marathon, not the sprint. Okay, so really quick, want to say hello and welcome to a couple of new followers over on Twitter. I want to say hi to, where'd she go? Chelsea Hernandez at Panda Bear Films. Thank you so much for following. And at Noticeably Bacon. What an awesome screen handle that is. Noticeably Bacon. And also Nick Hoff. Hi, thank you. And this is probably also the best and worst. Fucking trash. Fucking trash bag. That's what it is. It's at fucking trash bag. Oh my God, you guys. I get only like the top tier followers on Motherhood in Hollywood. If you're not following me, go to MIH podcast to get just the cream of the crop, the best of the best funny, ridiculous tweets that I send out. Also, check out my new podcast called Booze and Phasers. If you listened to last week's episode, you heard me talk a little bit about it with Audrey Kearns. It's also co-hosted by my friend Claudia Dolph. And we just have fun. We get drunk and we talk about Star Trek. It's literally just the most ridiculous, amazing show. So go and check that out as well. And find me on Facebook if you get a chance. Thank you. That's all I'm saying. All right. That's it for me from now. Here is my interview with acting teacher, very funny guy. I love him so much. Tony Rego.
You can hear me?
Yes. Oh, I'm just sick about it. Like I'm.
I know. Because you're very much a professional. So
I'm a pro. Like, yeah. Like I'm basically a huge star. In the podcasting community. So when something like this happens, yeah. I want to jump off a bridge. So thank you for coming back in.
Yeah, it's a Tony pleasure to Rego. See you.
I'm trying to decide if I want to redo our jokes. We should just let those go off into the ether like so many writers and comedians have to do.
Yeah, I think so.
So I'm here today again with my friend Tony Rego. He is an acting coach at Scott Sadid Acting Studios. He's also a new dad and a former improv and sketch comedy buddy, partner, yeah. Friend,
all of those.
Compatriot. Is compatriot
comrade.
A word?
Yeah.
Did I just make up a
compatriot.
Word?
Compatriot.
It wouldn't surprise me. So here's the deal. This is the second time that I've interviewed Tony in 24 hours because GarageBand ate my interview with Tony, but it only ate Tony's part of the interview.
I'm tasty.
It was tasty. It was like, this is too good to share. I'm going to delete it. So I have spent a long 24 hours, or well, 12 hours actually, like ripping my hair out and going, what the fuck am I going to do? And luckily, Tony was gracious enough to come back over and just repeat everything.
Yeah. After a short refractory period, I am back up to do it again.
I'm mortified. Like, mortified, because this has never happened. In 50 episodes of this GD podcast, this has never happened. So
I'm revolutionary.
You really are. You're a game changer.
Yeah. No, I'm the vanguard of mistakes.
Embarrassing, but you're so gracious.
It was funny because I pulled up your message on my phone and it just showed the first bit, which was, hey, friend. And I was like, uh-oh, that's not.
So, hi, buddy. Listen. Yeah, so, and we still to this day, I have no idea what happened to it. Yeah. The Apple support people couldn't even figure it out. Like, who knows where it went?
Yeah.
It just ate it. If it happens again, we're just going to...
I think the Chinese have it.
We're
I
just
think
gonna,
the Chinese true. Are listening to it.
That's probably true. I am constantly paranoid about... We have an Xbox that's got the Kinect with the video camera, and I'm constantly paranoid. Yes. Do you know what I mean? And I told Chris all the time, I'm like, if you see that light pop on at any time and we're not actually playing the game, call the police.
Yeah. I mean, if you think it's bad, the dog watching you when you have sex, imagine the Xbox. Yeah.
She did used to do that. We had to kick her out. It was super awkward. It was real awkward. Now we just let our daughter do it.
Yeah.
Ew, inappropriate.
And Channing's there.
Oh, yeah. Wait, that is my daughter.
I said dog.
Oh, but I know. I said now we just let our daughter do it.
Oh, now you let your daughter. I thought you said now you let our dog.
Great. Now the jokes are going to be just falling flat.
We are. This is going to be hell.
Oh, Jesus. All right. So let's get
into it. You're going to lose viewers with this one.
Viewers. I'm going to lose. Nobody watch anymore. Nobody watch. Just listen. Okay.
All right. Let's talk about it.
All right. So let's talk about, first of all, how we know each other, because we did used to do Acme Comedy Theater together.
Right.
A million years ago. And you, though, don't do Acme anymore. You're now teaching.
Correct. Yes.
Do you miss doing the sketch comedy? Do you miss... Were you in the improv side at all?
I was.
I feel maybe I blocked that out.
No. That's where I started, was improv. And I really didn't think I could do sketch. I, in fact, remember when I first saw you, because it was your first Scandal improv show.
Oh, the
You were playing X-ray the drummer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you were playing the drummer.
Tabitha Volz.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you had a Pixies t-shirt on. Pixies is my favorite band.
Really?
And I immediately was like, oh, I'm going to like this person. And then you started to act, and I doubted. No. No, then you were fantastic. That was a great character.
You know what's funny is out of all the characters I played at Acme, besides the one that I won the Acme Award for, my little Frenchie lady, Tabitha Volz was the one people remember the most because she was just like this badass character. Mm-hmm. But you know what's funny? I don't know anything about the Pixies. I didn't know anything about punk rock, nothing. And I would, every night before show, I would ask Chris, who's like an expert on all that. I'd be like, all right, give me some names of bands that people will know. And I'll never forget, we're in the middle of a show. And I think like Matt Key or somebody in the show made a reference to one of the bands. And I was like, yeah, it's the, oh, and I'm supposed to be this expert on like all things like punk rock from the 80s or whatever. And I was like, it's the band with the banana on the cover of their album.
Oh, no.
And Chris was in the audience. I could just see him going, oh, God, stop. Make it stop. He was dying. And then he's like, I think it was the Dandy Warhols or maybe it was the Pixies. I don't know.
No, the Dandy Warhols have the banana.
Yeah. So he was dying. He was like, I seriously, you got to stop doing characters that you don't know anything about. But...
Well, if that was the case,
then I'd be done. It would have been done years ago. And I'm out.
And here's another Oklahoma girl, Heather Brooker character.
Heather Brooker character.
Yeah, no, I joined the sketch because everyone was like, oh, you got to do it, you got to do it, you got to do it. And I had done, 2 years of improv and was like looking for something a little new.
Yeah, let's new challenge.
Yeah, and it just happened to be that the group, I remember... Travis Oates, who ran Acme at the time, said, you know, we only have like a couple of spots available for people, so you're going to have to be the top of your class.
Do you think that that was all kind of BS? I mean, honestly.
I don't at the time, actually. You know, I thought, oh, it can be more than a couple of spots. You know, we can negotiate it. But I knew that it probably wouldn't be all of us. But then in watching our particular class, which was like a really great group, come together... They created a new company. I think because they created a new company, it was not BS.
Right. The Charlie Company.
Yeah.
And that's when we were in together.
Yes.
And that's where we did the breast milk shake video.
Yes.
For Carl's Jr.
That's right.
Which is a sketch that I will never forget. It's one of my favorites that I've ever done, my favorite videos that I've ever done. It's where we kind of did a play back on the day of Carl's Jr. where... Kevin, this guy Kevin, who was in the company with us, and my friend Brandy, who I've talked about 1,000 times on this show, and Tony were all in it, and they were basically like shaking our boobs. This was pre-kids, so, you know, it was like maybe not as distasteful as I think it would. Maybe if I try to do it now, I would be like, that's terrible. But back then, I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. So they're basically shaking our boobs around doing a breast milk shake.
Yeah.
And I'll put
that song. Whatever.
To that film, shake that thing. And Tony was the one who luckily got to grab my boobs and shake them all around.
Which was
just...
It was a moment. I think we shared something. I really do.
We shared something. It was definitely a moment.
And it's I said this in the lost tapes, but I really do. Now that I have a kid and whenever my wife breastfeeds, I constantly think of that.
Think of that. The jiggling.
I really do. The jiggling and the song comes to me.
You know, Carl's Jr. actually had it removed from YouTube. At one point it had 50,000.
Yeah, it was popular.
It had 50,000 views and they had it removed for copyright infringement because of the song. And also probably because... I don't know if we actually directly used their logo, but I think we used a version of it.
Maybe.
They had it pulled from YouTube and it had something like 50,000 hits. And then it's still up on Funny or Die, though. So I'll put that link up on my website.
Carl's
so
Jr. has no power at Funny or Die.
Do you think?
I don't know.
I'm sure they probably don't
even realize it exists.
No, because it's only got like a couple thousand views there. And it's been up there now for 8 or 9 years.
A long time.
Yeah. A long time, really long time. So I don't think if they're going to remove it, I think they would have done that by now. I don't think they're worried about it. But when it started to gain momentum on YouTube, I think they were like, "Hey, wait a minute!
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
It's infringing on our brand." I'm available for advertising if Carl's Jr. is available.
She'll eat one of those big thick burgers.
One of those big thick burgers in a real sexy way.
I'll be in the bathing suit. You can eat the burger.
Right. So how long did you do sketch for then before you decided that you were because you transitioned into writing web series and all that?
Yeah. I did sketch and improv combined throughout my whole run. So from like 2006 to 2011, once I started the sketch. So I did the both. And then in 2011, we were doing the show Acme Saturday Night. And which was like, celebrities and really trying to do a multi-camera live taped show on the internet.
I was not a fan of that, by the way. I was not a fan.
Yeah.
I just kept thinking, like, we're all trying to be celebrities, if you will.
Right.
We're all working our butts off every week trying to get to that C-level status that some of these guest stars are in.
Right.
Why are we bringing in other people? And I see the reasoning behind it is you want them to bring their audience. Now that I'm so into social media and stuff, I get it. I see that you want people who are...
Yeah.
have a big social media following and a fan base
to give these great other performers some attention.
Right.
But.
I get it now, but at the time I was like, I'm a star.
Yeah.
Because I had more credits, if you will, than some of the people we were bringing in. And I was like, what the? And it was just my own arrogance, really.
Sure. I can understand that. But the problem with it is also is because when you write sketch, it's usually based around one large sort of fun character and everyone else kind of plays the straight man, which a lot of comedians think of as the boring roles.
Right.
And so it took the fun out of individual performers having to try and give the fun character to the celebrity.
Why do you think people think the straight man is the boring role? Because it's the straight man that is what's making people laugh.
And this is something I have to say in my class because I teach. The class I teach is sitcom. I constantly have to tell people that comedy is a dance. You know, it's dancing with two people in the... And the one character who is the big character gets to say the outrageous lines, and that's automatically going to generate a laugh. The other person has to, it's like the Ginger Rogers of the Astaire and Rogers, you know, has to dance backwards and in heels. They have to do all the setup. They have to do all the acting. And then they have to help build this thing and then pretend they had no idea it was going to happen.
Right.
And they can get the laugh if their reactions are authentic.
It's that reaction, that straight-laced reaction that also gets you laugh because that is the person that we, the audience, are relating to.
Yes.
We get that and that's our perspective because not everybody is the crazy, wacky character.
So I think maybe they do see it as the boring role, but I really see it as the challenging role.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm always trying to sing the praises of the straight man.
So when you're writing for sing the praises of the straight man, whoa,
half your audience just tuned out.
Right. They probably did. So when you were writing sketch, then is that sort of when you got inspired to kind of write your own things, your own web series, your own short?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I do better as sort of the straight man. Mm-hmm. And so.
Really? Are you sure?
So I was bored by my own sketches. I just can't write big characters. But in doing the web series, it was more about the absurd plot and to just have some, you know, a couple of characters go through that.
So for you, it was more about situational comedy.
Yes. Yeah.
Which
makes sitcom.
Sense.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. And even all my sketches had just sort of like odd ideas, mm-hmm. you know, like I did the homeless guy who took credit cards. I did the, you know, which even though that's somewhat of a big character, it's really about the idea and the absurd idea. And so the situation is what makes for it. The character wasn't really that big and my skills are limited. So, yeah, I had done a web series at that time in like 2008, 2009 called There Will Be Brawl. Mm-hmm. Which was fantastic. And Matt Key, who you just mentioned earlier, was the star of that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and it was a film noir set in the world of the Nintendo game characters. Matt was Luigi.
It filmed at our house.
It did, yes. Yeah. That's right.
You guys filmed at our house one of the episodes.
Yes, that's
right. And just made a fucking mess.
Yeah, it was...
We were like, I mean, there was like smashing of guts or something at one point, and I was like, what's happening?
I know. And it was brutal.
It was brutal. And somebody spilled something on our kitchen floor that even when we moved away, we couldn't get up. We were like, we have no idea what happened here.
Uh-oh.
It was weird. I mean, we weren't like mad about it, right. But it was just weird. It was like a sticky substance. Anyway, go on.
Let's not pursue that further. yeah, it involved with that, I played Link from the Zelda series. I was the police chief.
Mm-hmm.
I really saw how fascinating it was, how you could get your own equipment and make your own stories in like the beginning of the sort of Wild West democratic, you know, DIY sort of form of filmmaking. And I thought, I want to do this. So that's what I did. I got together with my buddy Kirk Diedrich, and we made a mob web series comedy. Our basis was, what if Abbott and Costello were in The Sopranos? Mm-hmm. And it was called Whacked. And it was fantastic. We just took all the basic tropes and conventions of mob movies and TV and tried to put a funny spin on it and had a blast doing it. Mm-hmm. But it was, to keep it sort of in that mob cinematic feel, it was a little production heavy and
sure.
pricey and difficult. So, we couldn't sustain that. And so then we, although we won awards for it, we were getting a great audience. We just couldn't sustain the production. So then I switched to a different web series called Dog Park, which was a much more lean, simpler
Simple.
Way to film.
And I think that's what almost has to be
yeah.
now, because there are so many web series and web ideas and stuff like that that are going around that are simple. They're just two people talking. They're just, you know, maybe one camera, maybe two cameras if it's a, you know, fancier mm-hmm. shoot. But people are cutting it down to simple and they're focusing on dialogue and stories.
Yeah.
That's a trend that I see happening with like web series and whatnot. Not to say you can't have heavy production value. I just
right.
watched this web series the other day called Namaste Bitches, which made me laugh. It's really skewers the LA yoga scene.
Mm-hmm.
This New York yoga girl comes into LA and it's like just every yoga stereotype, and it's pretty funny. So, but it's done really well and like actually had a crew behind it and all that. So I think, you know, it's such a wild west
yeah.
for online content, don't you think?
I absolutely do. And I would love to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. But it is sort of the thing where there is, you know, there used to be an old joke in Hollywood that every actor had a screenplay and, mm-hmm. you know, and that they were like, hey, you want to see my screenplay?
Here's
you want to read my screenplay?
Yeah, yeah.
Now it is every actor has a web series.
Totally.
And it really is like that. There is overload of web series.
It's also due every actor has a podcast. I just want to throw that out there. I just want to add that to the mix. Oh, check out my podcast.
Right.
I have two podcasts now.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. A year ago I had none.
More podcasts than kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they're easier to birth.
They are.
And they get as much attention. but you know, that is kind of the way things have to be nowadays to be an actor. It is, you know, the old method to stardom. I was talking about this and we sort of mm-hmm. debated it, was you would sort of start out doing commercials and then you get co-stars, which are the small, sort of forgettable roles in sitcoms or television shows, and move to guest stars, move to series regular, into
like
films.
There was like a hierarchy.
There was a ladder, path. A chain, yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not really like that anymore. Now it's, you got to kind of create your own content, get a bunch of viewers or listeners. And mm-hmm. And then people will start to take notice, and then you skip some of the bottom steps.
Here's what I want to know. Who are these people if you will. Are we talking about we want Middle America to go, wow, this whacked web series is hilarious, and start watching it and sharing it with their friends? Do we want industry to go, this is great? Because I feel like I'm so ingrained sometimes in the actor world that actors are constantly pitching themselves to other actors.
Yeah.
Watch my stuff. Come see my show. Watch me do stand up. Listen to my podcast. That it's hard to get fresh ears and fresh fans, if you will, for lack of a better word. And it just seems insurmountable. So it's like, do I go and just do a stupid Vine video and like hope that somebody sees it?
Well, I think what the industry would love is if Middle America was your fan base.
Sure.
Because everyone, even networks, don't know how to reach, the non-industry.
Yeah.
And in the old days, if you had 10 million viewers for your TV show, you were considered a flop. And nowadays, if you have 3 million...
you're a hit.
You're a hit.
Yeah.
So,
it's crazy.
It is that sort of thing. But I got a funny feeling it's more, if you can get a few key influential sort of industry insiders to be your followers, your fans
who like you. Now, what are you seeing happening? Talking about networks, and I know you are, since you teach at Scott Sedita, and you talk a lot about sitcom acting and stuff like that. What do you think is happening right now with the sitcom as we know it? Because it's not the sitcoms that we grew up on. It's not that kind of comedy anymore. But, I mean, I say that knowing that shows like Mom.
Yeah.
And what's the nerd show?
Big Bang Theory,
yeah.
Which is the number one. Yeah.
Number one. Those are classic multicam comedies that are doing gangbusters.
Yeah, yeah. And that's Chuck Lorre, so it's a little bit because of that. But it's been interesting. Everyone sort of talked about this dry period that the sitcom kind of went through. Mm-hmm. But if you even remember back in the early 80s, they said the sitcom was dead. And then along came Cheers and Family Ties and The Cosby Show, which, at the time was wonderful. Now is like, yikes. But I think sitcoms are going to come back. Whether or not how it will look.
Do you think like multicam sitcoms?
I do.
Because I can't, it's so hard for me to watch multicams.
To watch. Yeah, I know. But.
And it's not that I think they're bad, because I actually will watch, the fuck out of Frasier.
Yes.
There's something about Frasier that anytime it's on, I'm like, hey, baby, I'll watch that like crazy. There's a few sitcoms like that I watch, but I can't. Chuck Lorre's never going to come on my show. I know he's not listening. I just can't get behind. I never watch Two and a Half Men.
Yeah.
I don't watch Big Bang Theory. And it's crazy because I'm a comedic actress, so you would think that's my bag.
Well, part of that is, again, you talking about being insulated in the industry. Mm-hmm. I think those multicam sitcoms still work very well for people who are not in the industry. We in the industry, though, we are always trying to find what's new and different and edgy and sort of push the envelope. And really, the multicam sitcom is comfort food, and so it's not designed to kind of push the envelope. Though I will say there are some right now currently that are kind of pushing the envelope. For example, the Carmichael Show on NBC is sort of revisiting the old 70s Norman Lear kind of edgy issue.
Even from the opening, the way he's just walking through all the rooms into different scenes and stuff like that, from the opening, you could tell it has that very vintagey feel. Yeah. And I wonder if, I'm sure that was on purpose from NBC to do that. I don't think the show is very good. I think that it's a little flat. Maybe I'm not their demographic or their audience, but it's just not that funny to me.
It's doing supremely popular.
Yeah, yeah.
I
thought you were going to say shows like Aziz Ansari's show, Master of None.
Well,
that's
not
a comedy, right?
Yeah, but it's not a multicam.
No,
that's a single cam. And I love that show.
Yeah.
On Netflix. And it's also something very different. And what I love about that show is a lot of comedy lately has been very cynical.
Yeah. Louis C.K.'s show.
Louis C.K. Even with Seinfeld and Will and Grace. Those were people, four awful people, you know what I mean? And they would sort of attack each other. You think like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, these are awful people. We love them and we laugh at them and it's fun, but they're really society-wise awful people. Mm-hmm. Master of None is sort of bringing about a positivity and an optimism that is unique.
A realism.
In a way.
I know it's not his realism.
Girls has a realism. Yeah. but also has sort of still that cynicism.
Yeah.
I think it's the positivity of Master of None that's really, and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt has that same positivity.
Oh my God, that's oozing with positivity.
That's almost too much. It's
People, I know, people are loving that show, and I'm gonna get emails, but I'm one of the few that doesn't. I was like, this is too much. Her character, and I watched the first like 5 or 6 episodes, so maybe I'm not in a great position to judge it all, but it was just too over the top. Mm-hmm. There was no conflict, and there was no, I don't know. It didn't resonate with me. I mean, I need to revisit it because everybody loves it so much. And I want to give it another chance, but it didn't resonate.
I think that's also the difficulty of comedy.
I love talking about comedy and breaking it down. But before we continue doing that, we have to take a minute and talk about our sponsors. That's right, BumbieBox. BumbieBox.com is where you want to go to find out more about how you can get toys delivered to your door every month. And the great thing about the toys inside the BumbieBox is that they're all fully sustainable, eco-friendly. There's no harmful chemicals or plastic in any of the toys. And they've been specially curated for your child's age and interest levels. So inside every BumbieBox is a way for you to create new memories with your child and do it in a safe and chemical-free way. Go to BumbieBox.com now to find out how you can get BumbieBox delivered to your door and enter the code MIHOOD at checkout. That's MIHOOD, and you'll get 10% off your order. What a deal. Go to BumbieBox.com right now and find out why BumbieBox is a better way to play. Motherhood in Hollywood is also sponsored by Up For Probiotics. Now, you may be asking, what is a probiotic? Well, everybody has probiotics inside of it. They're good, healthy bacteria in your intestinal tract. Well, Up For Probiotics help support and strengthen those probiotics. Up For has been manufacturing probiotic supplements since 1979, you guys. That's a long time, so they know what they're doing. They've had over 40 years of clinical research on all of their probiotics, and they only use robust acid and bile resistant strains. So if you're a fan of probiotics or you're interested in trying probiotics for yourself, now's the time to do it. Go to upforprobiotics.com or you can check out Up For in your local Target store. That's where they offer kids cubes in the kids vitamin section, and they have probiotics in the immunity support and essentials section at Target. We've used the kids cubes ourselves here, and they've truly been a huge help to Channing and some of the digestive issues that she's having. So I can't speak highly enough about the Up For kids cubes. Go and check those out at your local Target or go to upforprobiotics.com. Up For Probiotics, creating a healthier inside since 1979.
Everyone has their own sort of taste when it comes to comedy.
Sure.
You put on a procedural, right? And everyone will sort of go, okay, this is how it goes.
Yeah.
Even if you don't like the cops, it doesn't make you not a fan of the show. You know what I mean? You sort of watch for the mystery. That's why those shows do so well.
Do so well and have been across, on forever.
Across any demographic. With comedy, you're very much either I love it or I hate it.
Yeah.
And so, in a way, comedy's trying to figure out how to work with smaller numbers because that's what you're going to get. And everyone has an opinion, which is good, but every opinion is sort of subjective towards that brand of comedy.
Yeah.
I myself, it's so funny. You know, people always ask me, as the sitcom teacher, what are your favorite sitcoms? And, I find a lot of the regular sort of sitcoms boring a bit, but because I'm, in the, I know how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm looking for something different or exciting.
It's hard when you're inside and also when you're an actor. Like, it's hard to also be a fan.
Yeah.
Because you can't really separate yourself because you're looking at it like, oh, I see how they set up that joke.
The other thing, that is very much so. And I always tell my students
this.
It's
hard to surprise.
Yes, that's what it is. Like a multi-camera comedy, the way the comedy works is the musicality of the jokes, which sort of tickles your sort of lizard brain, the primal kind of part of your brain that goes, ha-ha, with shock or with some sort of type of, setting a pattern and then changing it. And so when people watch sitcoms, it's not a, oh my God, this is wonderful, so witty, so funny. It's more of a, they sit there silently and then all of a sudden they go, what? why did I, you know,
I love the slow burn, like the ones that take me a minute that are where I'm like, what? And you know, Bob's Burgers does that to me. Bob's Burgers is that show that does that for me, where they have the smarter, I guess you would call it smarter.
Sure.
Even though they joke a lot about farts.
Well, anyone can do sort of lowbrow in a highbrow way, you know, like Veep is one of my favorite shows.
I've got to watch Veep. Everybody keeps telling me it's so funny.
Fast. It's so verbal. It's so witty. It is the one show where you're just sort of going, I can't believe they use the words in that sort of way, you know. But you know, with that sort of musicality, I always tell my students in watching a sitcom, I think when we sit down to watch it, we sort of sit down with a, okay, I dare you to make me laugh sort of mentality.
Sure.
And you're never going to laugh in that form. A sitcom really works best when it's in syndication, which is terrible. Because they have to go through 5 years to get to syndication. But when you have it out in the background, you'll suddenly start laughing at it and go, what is this show? And how? I never knew it was so funny. Why didn't I give it a chance?
Right. That's how I honestly rediscovered Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yes.
Because I didn't watch it when it was first on. But I've watched it in reruns since. And I'm like, this is a really funny show.
Yeah.
Also, to go way, way back, Golden Girls is mm-hmm. a comedy that I could watch over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Clearly, I'm 100 years old. I watch Golden Girls and Frasier. Frasier. Golden Girls and Frasier whenever it's on. I love TV Land. So when you're talking about sitcoms and stuff, I want to talk, because I have a lot of actors that listen to the show. I want to talk a little bit about what you teach in your class.
Yeah.
Because Scott Sedita, he created the 8 characters of comedy.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about a book. Yeah, it's a book. Talk a little bit about what that is, what those are, and then how you know, in your class, like how's it applied?
What Scott did is he was teaching drama. And then at the end of the night of class, of all this dramatic material, he wanted to give people a little dessert, what he calls a quick bit. It's a short little scene. And he made them comedies so that it would kind of leave you on a different flavor and on a fun little side note. And in the process, realized that not every student could play any role, that it was really kind of your essence had a fit with a certain character. Mm-hmm. So he realized the different essences in sitcoms. And he, like I, has a major love for sitcoms, can reference all of the sitcoms back to the beginning. And so he compiled this, you know, sort of Hulk sense of knowledge, Hulk being the stupidest character. No, but this brainiac sense of knowledge on sitcom, and put together this book that talks about the technique. He was also a writer, so he understands the writer's sort of idea on how to thread jokes in. And sitcoms is people fight over the wordage. I always say it's written like poetry, very specific rhythm, mm-hmm. very choice, you know, very belaboring of word choice, and it's performed like music. So he put together this technique portion of it, of the book, and then also put together these characters, which I absolutely love.
And they make such sense, too. Like, if you've ever read the book, or when you read the book, if you're an actor or performer, even if you're for writers, I think it's super helpful.
Oh, yeah. It's the first group that it took off with was the writers.
Because it's kind of like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Here's, and you can go over what they are briefly, mm-hmm. and then I have a follow-up question.
Mm-hmm.
Continue.
So the 8, there's the logical smart one, which is what we were talking about, kind of the straight man. Going back in the day, it was like the Ricky Ricardo of I Love Lucy. It's all the housewives now. Deborah Barone on Everybody Loves Raymond. Mm-hmm. There is the lovable loser, which was the template for that is Lucy or Ralph Cramden, that type of thing from Honeymooners. It's Ray. It's Chandler on Friends. Really a ton of lovable losers. You have the neurotic, which is Frasier or Monica. The great Silicon Valley guys are even creating a new kind of neurotic.
Neurotic, yeah.
You have the dumb one. Joey was a great dumb one. And Matt LeBlanc himself did, with Friends, the multi-camera dumb one, and with Episodes on Showtime, the single-camera dumb one. And it's a great sort of study in that character.
You know, I need to watch Episodes, too. I've heard that's really good.
Yeah, it is.
It's over now, right?
I think if it's not over, they got like a last film season
okay,
that's going to
yeah.
air. But yeah. After those initial four, you have the bitch bastard, mm-hmm. that's the character I play. That's like your Archie Bunker or, as I was saying yesterday, one of my favorite is Benson from Soap,
mm-hmm.
Robert Guillaume. You have the materialistic Which breaks into kind of two characters, the materialistic bitch bastard, sort of like a Paris Hilton or...
sort of.
or the materialistic prince princess. Mm-hmm. And then you have the womanizer manizer. Manizer is a word that Scott sort of created.
Womanizer.
Everyone used to do that. And then the final character is the in your own universe. Mm-hmm. Which is what you are, Heather,
right?
Brooker.
Right.
Those are the degenerates, the perverts. No.
Awkward. Get out.
They're the kind of crazy characters. Kramer,
yeah.
Phoebe, you know, or the foreign characters. Borat is a great in your own universe.
Totally. To the extreme.
Michael Scott from The Office is a great in your own universe.
See, and when I first took Scott's class and I realized, and when everybody kind of said, this is what you are, I was like, oh, it was like a light bulb went off. Like, that makes sense to me and why I get a script. And to me, it means something else, or I interpreted it in a different way than most other people do. And try to find a funny in a different way.
Yeah.
Because I'm just sort of looking at things differently, which is not a bad thing.
No.
It's just that it, you know, I also feel like I could play more of the straight man too. I can also play that pretty well. I feel like anybody could play a little bit of all of those.
When I talk to people when they're first joining up in class, I say when you read the characters, you're going to identify with all eight of them to a degree. But really some of your core essence or core characteristics that come out that are always ever present, like your skewed point of view that mm-hmm. you were just mentioning, those are almost always there. And those line up with generally one or two characters.
Now, here's the problem that I have is when I get my two-line co-star audition, I try to... You can't cram in all of the training and all of the thoughts and goals and processes and all that you want to do. And I know there's a lot of actors out there who also try to do that. And it's really frustrating.
You have to know what your place is in the script. I often tell my students, you know, every actor approaches a script by knowing what their character is. And so they get lost in sort of their portion of it, you know, and they don't read it objectively. You know, I think what you need to do when approaching a script is, like a jigsaw puzzle, you want to sort of look at the box top and go, okay, this is the final picture that we're going to try and create, mm-hmm. and I'm just one sort of odd-shaped piece of it.
Yeah.
But what we as actors do is we initially look at that one odd-shaped sort of thing and decide, I can fit more into this and change the shape.
Yeah.
We can't change the shape, otherwise we don't fit into the picture. We got to kind of see what the big picture is and just serve our part of it. So in those two-line co-stars, mm-hmm. they're really mostly logical, smart characters because they're just there to either give some information to help the protagonist mm-hmm. move on, or... if they are a different character, it's because they're the conflict for the protagonist. So they might be a bitch bastard.
Yeah.
They might be a dumb one. They're hindering the path.
I think it's really hard, though, because we as actors want to show what we can do.
Yeah.
We want to be like, look, I can look what I'm bringing to the table. There's a need you have as an actor when you walk in an audition to want to show the casting directors that you can do more.
And this is what I say to actors about that is... you know, with comedy, especially even when you're playing the bigger roles, not just the small two-line mm-hmm. roles, you have a certain rhythm that you have to hit. The comedy is really sort of limiting in terms of it must sound like this. The song goes like this. Mm-hmm. Everyone sings Happy Birthday the same way.
Right.
And so actors will come to me and say, well, you know, 400 actors are auditioning for this. How do I stand out?
Right. Yeah.
And their idea to stand out is to change the rhythm.
Yeah.
Is to, you know, sort of buck against the conformity. That's not the way to stand out. The way to stand out is much simpler and much harder. The way it is to realize that you are enough, that you are unique. You're not special. Because that is sort of to say that your own thing is better than everyone else's. Everyone who's coming into that audition is unique. Mm-hmm. But your uniqueness will align with the character in a way, will align with the producers or writers or directors' envision of that. Or sometimes it'll make them think of something new and take them away from their pre-thought.
Honestly, I think that statement right there is what a lot of actors hold on to, is the idea that, oh, if they see that little spark in my eye, or they see the way I pull mm-hmm. my hair back, or that I'm wearing glasses and, you know, that they'll go, oh, this is fantastic, and they'll give me more lines, or they'll write a bigger part for me, or whatever. There's that little glimmer of hope that I think a lot of actors have.
And that does happen.
Yeah.
It is sort of the Hollywood and Vine drugstore moment, you know, where you're discovered by some producer. Look at lovely lady. I'm going to make you a star.
I know. You're going to be it. I have, there is an acting teacher who I will not name. There's a few in town that do this sort of thing. And I don't know if you guys do this or not, but they say that you should hold your glasses in your hand, even if you don't wear glasses, or hold a pencil in your hand, and then take them off or put them on in the middle of your audition, because it makes you seem more like you're a character and that you're invested in, you know, like you're actually that person, because this person would clearly take their glasses off and put them back on, or wipe their glasses or whatever. Mm-hmm. I have had multiple teachers tell me that, and I see people do it in auditions.
Yeah.
Is that crazy?
I don't personally
subscribe
to that. Yeah. I think that is...
If anybody's out there that's heard that same thing, tweet at me, because I know I'm not crazy.
And that might work. That might work. You know, there's a whole sort of approach to auditioning where it is sort of superficial, and you kind of do these little things to trick the person into believing you.
Yeah.
And then there's the other approach, which is try and be very authentic and live it, and just have them see it.
Right.
You know, and that's sort of the route that I go with. Part of the script analysis program that Scott developed, called WoFrame, with his app, the Actors Audition app, is designed to make you really feel that authenticity and to bring yourself to it. And that's kind of what the characters do. Yeah. And that's why I loved, when I started with Scott City Acting Studios, it was as a student, and I loved that book. It really helped me more than anything had before.
Honestly, I felt the same way about it too. I was like, this makes sense to me. I just think that, I don't know. We actors, we all want to work. We all want to get paid. Yeah. We all want to do. I mean,
we want to live the dream.
I know you want to dabble in acting again and continue to do that.
Yeah.
How are you planning to do that? Tell me your plan immediately, and then I'll judge it harshly.
Okay. No, that's good. That's good.
On the spot.
I am going to buy a van, and I'm going to put posters on the side of it that say, hire me.
Honestly, it might work.
I know.
It might work, because people are doing whatever they can to be noticed and be seen nowadays.
Well, I think the way to do it these days is to become a content creator, which is what you're doing with this.
Mm-hmm.
I had talked to you about, I was just now myself thinking I should maybe do a
podcast.
I discuss at the top of every hour of my class the scene and how to get into it as an actor. And I bring a lot of my own personal stories to it. And my students constantly say, do you do stand up? You're so funny, you know, and it's not, that's not the sort of purpose of what I'm doing, but I do in a comedy sense, make it funny.
Does it make you want to do stand up?
I actually kind of, I do. And I don't want to do stand up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause we did talk about that a little bit. I've just started, you know, getting back into it. I did it years ago before Chan was born. And I mean, briefly, and now I'm kind of getting back into it, but it's terrifying, because your whole life, when people tell you, you're so funny, you'd be so great at stand up. And then you do it. And if you fail miserably, it's like, oh geez.
Well, it's that other thing. It's like I was talking about in my class, when I'm funny, it's like a sitcom being in syndication.
Yeah.
When you go to do stand up, it's like the audience sitting there going, I dare you to make me
laugh.
And so it's the challenge is much greater.
And when you're just starting out, you're mostly performing for fellow comedians
who don't
been doing it and
care.
Give no fucks about your kid jokes or parenting jokes.
Yeah, or they see the way the joke is playing out already and
they
don't.
Yeah, they know.
And they're there already. They don't laugh.
That's a tough audience.
It's tough. And I would love to do stand-up.
Mm-hmm. Come do it with me sometime then.
I will.
Let's go together.
I will, absolutely. I will go and bomb with you.
Will you come and bomb with me?
The thing about stand-up is...
Did you just burp like a man?
I've been doing it throughout.
I know. I noticed. That's
I know.
Really
people
gross.
Are going to hear this.
I'll just accidentally delete this.
I'll be back tomorrow. I'm drinking a Red Bull. I must have caffeine, and I must have it like almost all times throughout the day. So I'm drinking a Red Bull, which gets me a little
gassy.
It gets me a little burpy. I apologize.
Everyone,
to those.
Don't tune out, please.
Yeah. I'm farting into the cushions of your chair, too. Speaking I'm not.
Speaking of gassy, I want to talk about your baby.
Oh, yes.
We have to talk about your baby because you're a new dad.
I am. He's 6 months old today.
Cute. Today?
Today.
Have you guys been posting the pictures, the monthly progression pictures?
Yes. Yeah. We put the little sticker on.
Who was that?
That was your husband and your daughter.
Oh, what are they doing?
They walked by hurriedly.
Oh, somebody has to poop.
With very frightened faces.
Uh-oh.
That were into sort of grimace-like smiles.
That means somebody pottied.
I'm betting it's your husband.
Oh, I bet it's Chris. Chris pooped his pants.
He was holding.
He's so cute. And all right, and we talked about his name, but we have to talk about his name again because I need everyone to hear this story. Please say the full name of your son.
My son's full name is Riley Coyote Rago. Yes, Riley Coyote.
Ridiculous, but I love it.
It is. It's great. It is. I'll tell you the story again. It's fascinating. So my wife and I were coming up with the first names, and we were both compiling lists. And she had much more names at her list, because she was going through apps and, you know, finding all the popular names and all that. And I was just sort of thinking of names. So she had like 150 names and I had like 12.
Surprised you had 12. That's pretty impressive for a dad. Sometimes they're just like, I don't know, Steve.
Yeah. Boy.
Yeah.
Name it boy. So we talked about it and it came down to that she really, and I equally liked the name Riley. And so I said, okay, you get your name, whatever. And she then said, okay, well, you know, it's only fair that then you get the middle name.
Right.
Well, I sort of feel like middle names are useless. Mm-hmm. You don't know my middle name. I don't know your middle name. Middle names really only distinguish you from the other sort of Heather Brookers or Tony Ragos. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think there was going to be 100 Riley Ragos out there. So I was like, it's pointless. But okay, she really wanted a middle name. She also said, look, we want to kind of give a creative name to the kid because we are artists in L.A.
But
we don't want to give it, you know, we also want to give a normal name because, you know, those who are named Apple or Pilot, you know, probably hate their name when they get older.
Maybe. Or maybe they're like feel the need to buck against it and be like, look what a rebel I am.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
So we thought we'd give a sort of normal name and a crazy name. So Riley was the normal name. hopefully. And I got the creative middle name. I mentioned him earlier. My friend Kirk Diedrich posted on my Facebook an article about, I live near the LA River, that gushing trickle of water. And I also live near Griffith Park. And so there's a large sort of wildlife community roaming in this major urban center, and they found a baby coyote and they tagged it, and they're going to follow this, what it's like to see a wild animal live and grow in a urban center. So he sent me this story and said, you should name your kid after the coyote. And in putting that together, it was like Riley Coyote.
Why didn't we think of this?
Well, it sounds like Wile E. Coyote.
Of course it does.
Yes.
That's what everyone immediately is going,
Oh, you named him after a cartoon. Well, yes, part of that is I'm a huge fan of the Looney Tunes. You know, growing up, if it wasn't sitcoms, then it was probably Looney Tunes that I was watching. And on DVD, I have all the golden collections, all those things, you know. And so in trying to come up with names, when my wife was coming up with some of the first names, she would say names like Hunter or Striker or...
Striker?
I don't know. You know, that sounds like an X-Men character. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Doom. And I said, no, we can't name our kid. I said, my son will probably be like me. Not the cool kid. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm cool in the way Tom Hanks said he was cool, which is I'm not trying to be cool, which is cool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not cool. And so I said, we're not going to have a cool kid. We're going to have more of a kid that like bounces into the room and is sarcastic and sits in the back of the classroom, cracking up a couple of people and maybe gets in trouble for passing notes. I said, so, you know, rather than name, you know, the soccer star or the valedictorian, let's try and come up with a name for a cartoonist, because that's probably what my kid will be. And
Coyote Rago.
And so there that's came, you know, when we had...
I love that you're just sort of putting that out there for your kid. Like, you're not going to be the leader. You're not going to be the Stucco president. You're going to be the dick in the back who is, like, a pain in everyone's ass.
Well, I think...
poor Riley. Tell him to come to Auntie Heather.
He can certainly become the leader. I would love for that. And he's a little bit more of a serious kid. You know, his personality is starting to come out and all that.
Channing was really serious at first too. Yeah. And she got silly. She's so silly now at three. She's like, she'll go, Hey mom, look at this. For no reason. And then just like cross her eyes and look at her nose. And I'm like, you're not even doing anything.
Right.
Like, please step it up. But it's just funny. They get sillier for sure.
Yeah.
Or some get more serious. I don't know.
Whatever personality he has, mm-hmm. I'm totally open to. I love that little kid. He's, you know, it's difficult being a parent.
Yeah.
It takes all of your attention, all of your energy. Time. You feel the highs tremendously, but you also feel the worry and the fear tremendously, and it's persistent.
And Marianne is an actor too.
Yeah.
And you guys, how is that going with you struggling, you know, to balance auditions or your creative side? And, you know, I know you said you're not doing a whole lot of auditioning, but still it's industry type things.
Yes. So, with the teaching career and with parenthood, mm-hmm. My actor career has sort of taken a back seat. Though I'm still there and trying to do anything and will work for anything. And Marianne, at the same time, she is still trying to do anything, perform. Her creativity has sort of been ignited.
Yeah.
Being with the kid, I think it's, you know, babbling for 12 hours a day makes you go, oh, I've got.
And that's one thing I try to tell people, and I wrote in that backstage article that I did, is that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are thinking about having kids and they are trying to, you know, they're worried their career will never be the same. And I'm like, are you a big star now? Okay. It's probably going to be about the same.
Yeah.
Or they're worried that, you know, they'll be just too tired for everything. And you are at first, you really are, but it also is a big creative boom.
Like yes.
Motherhood in Hollywood was birthed, if you will, out of my love for my daughter and all the fun we were having and me wanting to still be creative and share stories about her and talk to other creative parents and stuff like that. So I think that if kids are something people are thinking of, it's very doable, especially because acting kind of lends itself to a freelance sort of lifestyle where you can be home more, you know, childcare is obviously the biggest issue. And that was one thing I wanted to ask you about that we talked about in the previous version of this interview was, why is it that you don't think a lot of acting studios in LA offer a childcare option?
Right.
I'm so surprised in all my research and looking around the internet that there's no studios in town that offer that.
Well, I think that's a brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. And I often have people arriving to my class late saying, oh, the babysitter canceled at the last minute. Unfortunately, I think it comes down to space. You know, LA still is an urban city, you know, crammed in. And so even at our studio, we have only two studios in the building that are almost always filled with either classes or actors coming to coach for auditions.
Really just a space type issue then. Yeah. And I mean, that's something I didn't even think about because I was like, I just don't know why they don't do this. But then every acting class I've been to, it is just one big room.
Yeah, so you're crammed in there. And if they have the space, you were then also mentioning how then there's also the legalities of all that.
Yeah, the licensing, all of that.
But I think that's a great idea. If you have the space, then I encourage people to look into the legalities.
Yeah, I'm just honestly surprised that no acting teachers have seen the value of the parent-actor community.
Yeah.
Or not that they haven't seen the value of it, but the value of offering this service
to
parent actors. Because I think there's a lot of actor parents who would go to more classes, who would be more interested even during the day, especially for me during the day. If I could go take a class in the afternoon that I know she could have childcare for a few hours, I would do that in a heartbeat just because I would feel better knowing she's being taken care of. And then I can network with my fellow actors and get the acting juices flowing in. It's a big part of the reason why I'm not in a class right now is because it's too hard to figure out childcare. And, you know, I know it may not be feasible, but man, I wish it existed.
I know.
It's one of those things where I
think
wish
it is feasible. I just think it's, you know,
it have to be the right studio, the right time.
Yeah,
the right
there's
space.
A lot of hurdles to it. You'd have to kind of go into your new studio
knowing
that you were going to do that. Yeah.
I wish you could start like a movement. Start like tweeting. Everybody start tweeting at your favorite acting teacher. I'm sure they'll love that.
Right. We could put up a pen in our parking lot, like, I think.
No one would ever let me come into class. They'll be like, this Heather Brooker lady is causing some major problems. We do not want to offer childcare. I think also, too, there probably is a thought of this is a professional acting studio. We are not a daycare service.
Yeah.
I get that. But it's a like with any business, I feel like it's an added service that you offer.
You know, we as a family.
Like free Wi-Fi.
Yeah. We as a family, we joined the Y because in part they offer daycare.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a huge.
That's nice that your Y does that.
Yes.
That's nice.
I know. I know. And we often hand off the kid. If he cries for more than like 10 minutes, they come and they get you.
They
and,
do that at my gym too.
But it's great. That's, you know, that was the incentive in a way for us to go there. So why wouldn't an acting studio or anything that a parent has to do?
I know. I just am always, now that I'm so ingrained in being an actor mom, looking for ways to make it a little easier for me. Right. For me. It's purely selfish.
Have you tried chloroform?
I have. Oh, heavens. And on that note, I do want to tell people really quickly, where can they find you and stalk you? I know you're not on Twitter, which is still shocking and scandalous to me.
Yeah.
I want you to go open your Twitter account right now so everyone from Motherhood in Hollywood can find you.
We can do it together.
We can do it together.
You can find me, you know, I have my Facebook page, Tony Rago. I have a YouTube channel. I think it's under the name Chin Hole. I have a I have a huge cleft in my chin, and my son also has the huge cleft in the chin. It's wonderful. There was no question of paternity.
Thank God. That cleared it up, the chin hole.
That's, well, you know, they strap those wristbands and ankle bands on everyone when you give birth. And so every time, you know, they take the baby or handle the baby, they have to read off the number. You know, it's it's like you're getting a governmental package.
They're very precious little
yes,
packages.
But and I would always just go, look at the chins. I think we can skip the numbers.
Oh, Riley.
But so, yeah, you can find me on YouTube. You can find my web series and such like that. It might be under my name as well.
And
I don't
links,
search for myself.
I'll put links up for everything on Motherhood in Hollywood as well. And people can also like Scott Sedita's Facebook
page. Yes, Scott Sedita.
He's also
on
the Twitter, right?
Yeah, his website is scottseditaacting.com. And so you can always find information about me there as well. I have a... movie that I play a very fun role in. It's a horror comedy called Killer Party that's going to be coming to video on demand in August.
Nice.
That some friends of mine got together and self-financed and made on their own. And
that's
great. That's an incredible podcast story in itself.
That's fantastic.
I have a improv company called The Cliffhangers. They are on Twitter.
They
there you go.
Are. And they're also on Facebook too.
Yes. Facebook.
All of our friends from
That's
Acme.
Right.
Love all those guys.
A small little group of us who, when we left Acme, decided, oh, we still kind of want to do this, but very irregularly and poorly.
And nailed it.
No. So we're 3.5 years in now, and we're getting successful, you know, sort of repeat audiences and sold
That's
out houses.
Great.
We're at the Impro Theater. We have a show tonight.
Yes.
Tonight being
can't go.
When we tape, not the tonight being when people are listening.
When people are listening, right. So, nobody go there right
So
now.
I will tell you now, if you're listening, it went great.
it was a smash success. Cool. Well, I'll put all of that information up then. Also on Motherhood in Hollywood too, so everybody can find it there.
Totally.
You guys can also find me at MIH Podcast on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagram at Motherhood in Hollywood. Thank you again for coming and doing this interview again. If it doesn't record this time, or if I lose the track, then just it wasn't meant to be.
I'll do it live.
It wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
I know. Oh God. I
no, it it'll work.
I see it recording right now. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
All right, and thanks for listening, everybody. Remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Have a good day. Bye. Balls.